Welcome to the Top Business Leaders Podcast. You'll learn how successful people just like you have grown their businesses, expanded their influence, and made money by writing a book. On each episode, you'll learn the inside secrets to help you create a book that can serve as a powerful marketing tool to skyrocket your business. I'm your host, Dan Janelle. I help thought leaders, business executives, and entrepreneurs write their books. To find out more and to download our show notes, go to topbusinessleaders.com. Welcome, everyone, and welcome to our guest today, David A. Fields. How are you, David?
I am excellent, Dan. I always love doing stuff with you, so thank you so much for inviting me to be part of your podcast.
Oh, my pleasure, and I am so glad you're here. You're one of the few people whose books I've actually read beforehand, and it was a great book, and I'd love to talk to you more about how you created that book and let people know how they can create books just like yours. But first, why don't you tell our audience a little bit about you and what you do and your story?
Oh, gosh. Okay, so I run a small consulting firm that actually advises other consulting firms. We basically help leaders of small firms, anything under usually under $100 million, anywhere from startups to about 100, maybe 120, create the firms they want to create. So win more clients, put more profit in their pockets, and actually enjoy the ride upwards. So that's pretty much what we do now.
Great. And you wrote a book, and tell us about that journey for that book. Why did you write the book, and how has it helped you get clients?
Sure. And just to clarify, so I think the book you're talking about is actually my second book. Mm-hmm. So there's been different journeys. The journey of my first book was definitely different from the journey of the book that you've spent more time with, which is also different from the third and fourth book, which are in the works right now. But the second book was really written because my market had shifted to consulting firms, and I wanted to create more inbound call for my services and my firm's services through thought leadership. And so as opposed to my first book, which was truly just a business card, if you will, and instantly made money, right? It instantly made six figures, not through book sales, but through the other ways books help you get business. This book, the trajectory has been quite different. The book you're talking about, The Irresistible Consultant's Guide to Winning Clients, it was meant to get broader distribution, get broader purchase, and then just create on incoming traffic.
Okay. And you have a lot of great content, and it's a thin book. It's a great book to read and get through. How did you decide what to put in the book and what to leave out of the book?
Okay. Interesting question, because it was meant to be thinner. I actually had gone into this project with the intention of writing what I call an airplane book. So an airplane book to me is a book that you can read on a flight from New York to Chicago, or from San Diego up to Seattle, and it's probably close to that, but a little over that. But that's always my goal, to create that airplane book. The content for this book was actually a course before it was a book. And so to some extent, what to put in and what to keep out was fairly easy, because we had kind of road tested it. And I learned a little bit, at least, about what was important, what resonated, and also how much was too much. And for me, at least, the hard part is always dialing it back to keep it, you know, really digestible. But the outline on this one was a little easier because it came from a course. And since I'd written the course and had success with the course, the book followed. Though the book was different from the course, and we have to now update the course to match the book.
So it's a constant learning process. Let's take a step back. When we talk about an airplane book, how many words or how many pages are we talking about?
So to me, an airplane book is about 120 pages in that range. I don't remember how long this book is. I'm looking around for a copy. It's probably closer to 200, I think. And though they're pretty readable, I mean, we built it so that it would be an easy book to read. It still takes 2.5 hours, I think. Most people probably take a little bit longer to read it, just because they're constantly underlining and highlighting and all of that kind of stuff. But an airplane book, ideally 90 minutes, I think.
Well, if people are underlining and highlighting and making notes on a book, that's a good thing.
Yeah, it is a good thing. We get pictures from readers, literally get pictured with dog ears or highlights and all that kind of stuff. It's a lot of fun.
Cool. One of the reasons why your book is so easy to read is because you have so many pictures, hand-drawn pictures. Tell us about your journey with those pictures, because they really do add a lot. Describe what some of those pictures are and how they help illustrate your work.
Well, most of the pictures are stick figures, and they're all hand-drawn. I draw them right on this laptop over here, which if you're listening, you can't see, but I'm pointing to. And I will tell you, Dan, my experience has been the illustrations, I'm trying to remember where originally they came from. I don't know. I think I just decided to play with it. And people responded to it so well. And it's kind of become part of the brand. Hmm. But here's what I find amazing is I have an editor who reads every article I publish. As you know, I publish an article every week. And occasionally she has to read that article before I've done the illustrations. And what she will tell me is they're much harder to read. And that's even just a 500-word article, 700-word article, is much harder to read without the illustrations. Even though the illustrations are sometimes tangential at best, they're often jokes only I understand, mm-hmm. or you know, just a few people. Though sometimes they are actually capturing important content. No matter how tangential or central they are, that visual break in the content makes a huge difference to the readability of the article and of the book, as you said. So it just, I think, you know, people are used to white space. Their brains process in different ways, and having that kind of break in how your brain is processing is really helpful. That's been my experience with it.
Interesting. How do you come up with those illustrations, though? How do you decide what to illustrate, and then how does that turn itself into art?
Well, I think art is really a stretch, Dan.
I agree, folks. Folks are listening, we're talking about stick figures, we're talking about columns, we're talking about real basic third grade kind of drawings and illustrations, but they work.
Yes, I think most third graders could do a little better. But so usually I will. There's two ways at this. For the book, for instance, that if there was more than a page or two of text, to me that meant an illustration was needed, and I would look through and say, okay, what can I illustrate? But often so I look for those spots. But many of the spots were already filled because there was a fundamental concept that I wanted to reinforce with an illustration. Right side up thinking, which is a fundamental underpinning of how we approach business development for consulting firms, it is such a core concept that had to be illustrated. There are other core concepts, fishing where the fish are, that just almost demands some sort of graphic treatment. And so those were already filled in because the concepts demanded the graphic. And then otherwise I would break up the space.
Okay. You touched on another point I wanted to delve deeper on, and that is your vocabulary.
Yes.
You've taken basic concepts, made them your own, and given them new names. Talk about that whole process. Why do you do it? How do you do it? And, of course, give us examples along the way.
So there are a couple of reasons why. That serve me and my consulting firm and serve the reader and the client. When I go into a client, and let's say I'm working with a firm, I often work with boutiques on their business development. I might work with a handful of their consultants at a time or train the whole firm. It's very helpful to have a common vocabulary and a vocabulary that allows them to communicate fairly big concepts quickly. So right side up thinking, which at its essence means being client focused, but is actually much more than that, it once a client embraces that, or once an organization embraces that, and even if you're a solo consultant, once you embrace it, it instantly communicates to you a way of thinking, a way of acting, a way of writing, a way of doing your proposals, of doing discovery, everything. And so having that vocabulary that's common is very helpful, I found, for clients, just to communicate internally and for me to communicate to them as I'm helping them learn to improve their business. Now, of course, it also helps when people are talking about right-side-up thinking, for instance. If someone mentions right-side-up thinking because they've worked with me or read my work, and they're talking to some other firm or some other consultant that doesn't know me, and the other consultant says, well, what do you mean right-side-up thinking? There's at least a decent chance they're going to go, oh, that's a David A. Fields concept. You really ought to get his book, or you really ought to read his stuff. Right? And at that point, you know, there's another prospect, or at least someone else who's exposed to my work. And so when your vocabulary enters the sort of the general world, or the accepted sort of nomenclature, even of an industry or an organization, it helps you spread your word in your name. Does that make sense?
Oh, totally. How do you come up with those concepts? Is that just
the concepts or the names?
Both, the concepts and the names. It is a stroke of brilliance that just sort of happens. You know, you're anointed. It's just you have this great gift. Yeah. Like Paul McCartney can come up with songs that ping. Or is there a formula to it?
Yeah, I'd like to guess that Paul McCartney, some of his songs came easily, and some of them took a lot of work. and he worked at his craft. And I definitely work at my craft. There are things that seem really obvious, even titles of blogs that seem obvious. I might have written 20 titles down. When I've done an illustration, I've often come up with ideas for 3, 4, 5, 6 illustrations or more before I actually go, okay, you know what? This is one that will work. And then again, sometimes my editor says, no, and I have to go back and try again. That's true for naming, and it's true for concepts in general. Sometimes I know ultimately the message I want to convey, and then I start writing to it, and often I find, you know what, that message wasn't quite right. There's a different message. And so it's definitely not a, you know, wow, I'm anointed with the I'm blessed with all this genius. It's work. And I listen. And I listen to what other people say. So smart people like you, Dan, say amazing things in your book and your writing, and I'll realize that is great. And I will, if I can attribute it to you, I'll attribute it to you. So I listen. I listen to what my clients say. I listen to what other smart people say, and I work at it.
Cool. You mentioned working with an editor. To tell us about that process, because one of my other interview subjects said the problem with self-publishing is that there's too much self in it. So I want to explore the whole idea of this collaboration. What do you want or expect from an editor?
Well, so a dear friend of mine said, used to say often, that there's no such thing as good writing, only good rewriting. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of truth to that. So for my books, I have a different editor than for my everyday, you know, every week stuff. And it's a brutal, awful task. I hate being edited. I'm terrible at being edited. And so my editor and I mean, she's amazing. And she puts up with a lot of grief, because my instant response to anything that's been crossed out is, no, no, no. That's just so important. It has to be kept. And of course, I'm always wrong.
Always? And, really? And why do you think that is?
Well, because my instant reaction is based on, I created this and I want to keep it. As opposed to being right side up, audience focused, which is what the editor's job is, to say, you know what, this doesn't make sense, or I don't need this, or I don't get it, or it doesn't resonate well with me. And I'm not important, right? That's the whole number one lesson about consulting, is consulting is not about you, the consultant. Consulting is about them, the clients, the prospects. And the same thing's true of your writing. If you are writing as a business professional, your book is not about you. Your book is about your reader. And if you forget that, you'll lose the reader. We make that very absolutely central to what we do and what I do. But of course, my first reaction is like anybody's first reaction is, wait, I created this. It's important. And she has to say, you know what? I didn't get this. Can I tell you one quick story about related to that?
Please.
So my first book was the Executive's Guide to Consultants. I was very, very lucky with that book. And I had offers from, I think, 4 publishers. And which didn't matter because I was going to go with McGraw-Hill. McGraw-Hill made me an offer. So I was going to go with them no matter what because I wanted McGraw-Hill. But because I had offers, they bid against each other, which was great. Besides the point, the point is that, as you know, when you write a nonfiction book and you get it commercially published, you submit a proposal and that proposal has a sample chapter. My sample chapter never made it into the published book. Which is amazing. So the sample chapter, which somehow managed to garner interest from 3 publishers or 4 publishers, never made it into the book. And that's because I rewrote it 3 times and it was never good enough. And I finally yanked it. And if you don't have an editor and you don't have someone pushing back, I think you don't live up to that level of writing.
Great answer. Good example. Tell us how you use the book in marketing to get your clients, this book or any of your books. What are your tactics?
Well, so, the book, how do we use the book to get clients? Well, again, I'm really fortunate on the Guide to Winning Clients happens to be one of those books, modesty aside, is a really great book. And, and the feedback shows that on Amazon. And as a result, if I can get it into people's hands, I know there's a good chance those readers will become clients, at least a certain percentage of them. And again, because it's a good book and people have liked it, that's helped me get it into people's hands. Towards the end of the year, for the last couple of months, the book has been in the airport bookstores. And, and it's hard to keep books in airport bookstores, but it's been there for a couple of months. It's been on display and I get regular calls from people who picked up the book at an airport and read it and then said, hey, could you work with us? I have a client right now who's, their firm is based in Poland and one of the partners bought the book going through the Atlanta airport. And said, we've got to work with you. And I have clients from around the world with that same experience where they picked up the book. So getting the book in people's hands is super important. That said, I rarely ever give my book away for free. And when I do give it away, it's through a partner. So I don't just send it out or give it.
Well, why is that, Gigi? Why don't you target certain people and say, here's my book?
Because I think that if you give your book for free, and Dan, I'm just going to give you my own impression. Mm-hmm. I haven't actually tested this, okay? Sure. So I'm going to give you my own feeling and my own experience over the years. Is the old saying, there's no value in free, has some truth to it. Mm-hmm. And if you just give away your book, it doesn't hold that much value. And people, I think, are more likely to devalue it and to disregard it. Mm-hmm. So when my book is given away, one of the things I do is I work with partners, which is other firms that target the same types of clients that I have, but we don't compete. And I have a program where they will give me the names of important clients or prospects of theirs. And we craft a letter and basically they send to me a whole bunch of letters on their letterhead. That says, hey, I ran into this author in this book. I thought you'd really like it. I think you're going to like what's on page 54 or something like that. And they give me a little stack of these. And then what we do is we take books and we take those little sticky tabs and put it on page 54 or whatever's written in there. So it looks like it's been hand done. Package it up and send it. Because now it's not just looks like something coming for free from me. Hey, read my book. This is, in fact, a way for the partner to create value for their prospect or their client. It looks personalized. I'm copied at the bottom. And I can call and say, hey, Dan, I noticed that so-and-so sent you a copy of my book. And I thought, wow, I should reach out to you and find out more about you. Easy as that.
Fantastic. That's a great idea. As we're closing up here, you said you've written two books. You're writing two other books now. How do you decide what topics you're going to write about? Is it because of that's where your mind is going, or because that's where people are looking for, or that's where your new business is, you see potential, or is it something else?
It's all of that. It's because I find it interesting because I know my clients need it. So the next book, the next book coming out is Same Rain, Bigger Drops. It's about not just how do you win business, but how do you win when you win a client? How do you win more? How do you win bigger projects? And I actually created that before I created the stuff that's out now, but it didn't make sense to lead with the stuff that's out now. Mm-hmm. So the sequel actually came first, but now we have to get it into book form. And the book after that is just drills down into an area that I found people want the most help in. And so that's the next one. And then there are more after that. But it's too bad writing books is so hard. And it really is hard because I've got all these books that are just, you know, dying to come out. And I think people want to read.
Why do you think writing books is hard?
Oh, it's really hard work. I find writing to be very hard work. Good writing, not so hard. Great writing, really hard. You have to take the time to make sure you're being concise and compelling, keeping the reader on track. We tested every single page of that book. So while I say I'm fortunate that the book is so good, there's a reason it's so good. We worked very, very hard to create a book that people would want to read and find value on every page. And that's work.
Cool. Then I'll close with one question. How do you test every single page? This is fascinating. No one has ever mentioned that before.
Well, so like many authors, we have beta readers, and I sent beta readers. I'm trying to remember, were you a beta reader on my book or not?
I can't remember. But you were a beta reader for my book, and you gave me great information about beta readers, which made it. I think there's seven pages in my book that are directly attributed to you. So thank you very much.
You bet. So we would send chapters. I guess send chapter or two to you, Dan. And at the top of each chapter was a scale. And it said, and we asked people at the end of each page, just, or maybe it was as you get to the next page, you rate it, just tell us, you know, what you're feeling right now. Whether you're getting bored, you are bored, whether you can't wait to keep reading. And it was a 7-point scale or some sort of Likert scale. And any page that came back with anything below midway, or even we knew we had to, there was something wrong with that page. It had to be cleaned up, condensed, rewritten, something.
Well, you have the thickest skin of anyone I've ever met. David, thank you so much for being a guest. Tell us a little bit more about how people can reach out to you. And of course, name your books again, because we went by them very quickly. Please.
Sure. The book that people will want to read, because it's much more readable and it's fun and it's good, is The Irresistible Consultant's Guide to Winning Clients. And if you were to go on to Amazon or wherever your favorite bookseller is and just type in Guide to Winning Clients, you'll find it. And to find me, davidafields.com. And it's pretty easy to get in touch with me and my team. And I love talking with folks about books and consulting and just about anything else.
Well, thank you very much, David, and thanks everyone for listening.
Thanks for listening to Top Business Leaders, the only podcast that shows you exactly how people just like you have built their businesses by writing a book. If you'd like to write your book but don't know where to start, you can find great information at writeyourbookinaflash.com. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back next week with another insightful interview to help you become a top business leader.